This episode of Section D was first broadcast on the 29th of October, 2013 on Monocle 24. Section D is brought to you in association with Lexis. Hello and welcome to a special edition of Section D, the weekly design hour here on Monocle 24. I'm Alad John, standing in for Tom Morris. This week we're in the Netherlands for Dutch Design Week, taking place in the home of Dutch globetrotting, technology and design success, Eindhoven, the birthplace of Philips. We'll hear from the director of the event, Martijn Paulen, about why he has chosen Now Future as this year's focus.
I honestly believe that the future is about combining the left half and the right half of your brain. Bringing the nerds, bringing the creatives, and them together will bring the solutions for the future. And we have that DNA right here in the heart of our city.
And Chief Design Officer for Philips Lighting, Rogier van der Heijden, tells me how, despite a rather muted presence at the design event, the iconic Dutch brand is very much involved with emerging talent in the Netherlands.
That makes Philips in the collaboration really an enabler, because the fashion designer has a dream. And our technologies in the field of integration of fabrics and light make that dream become real.
And from tech to textiles, we explore the new lines and the legacy of Vlisco, masters of Indonesian fabric prints, yet most popular in Africa.
It's a lot about drawing, a lot about colors, a lot about storytelling. And I think everybody knows our product, but doesn't know it's a Vlisco product.
Plus, creative director of the Eindhoven Design Academy tells us the mark he wishes to leave on the institution. I visit the school's graduation show, and our reporter David Pleasant hits the streets to assess some of the designs on the circuit this year. That's all here on Section D on Monocle 24. You are listening to a Dutch design special edition of Section D with me, Alad John. We have indeed ventured out once again. This time we're in Eindhoven for Dutch Design Week to find out, amongst other things, what makes Dutch design, well, Dutch. Taking over much of Eindhoven proper, large chunks of the 9-day event took over the former factories of technology giants Philips, which founders Gerard and his father Frederick grew in light of their first and immensely successful product, the incandescent lamp in 1891.
De oude gloeilampenfabriek kreeg het eerste aandacht. Een gevelsteen herinnert eraan hoe Gerard Philips daar de eerste lampen maakte. En het was hier dat ingenieur Frits Philips een grote krans plaatste om deze pionier te eren.
There'll be more on Philips and its legacy later in the show. And as you might expect, the air is full of excitement. Unsurprising maybe when over 2,000 designers and much fanfare has taken over the town. With the new crop of emerging talent, social activism is never far away from what's on offer.
Simply because electronic devices are not designed to last. This makes electronic waste one of the fastest growing waste streams in the world. And our phone is one of the biggest causes. So this is a new kind of phone.
While many designers let the quality of their work speak for itself.
Dutch design is just making nice products, good products. They have to be everlasting, you know?
Over the week, we've endeavoured to meet with some of the thinkers behind the event, which has taken on a new guise under the leadership of its director, Martijn Paulen. Now Future is the title, and with an eye on the future, this year the event plays a fundamental role in introducing designers to the market and an excited public. Martijn Paulen is the new director of Dutch Design Week as of this April. He's not a designer, but a business school lecturer and organisational psychologist. We found a moment to talk over lunch in the Piet in Eik restaurant, housed in the repurposed and reinvented Philips factory landscape near the iconic Strijd area of Eindhoven. Martijn told me he's intent on bringing his unique direction to events this year, instilling a need for professionalism to the emerging talent and looking to the future with optimism.
First of all, I want us really to focus on the future, because I think designers, especially in the broad definition of design, really bring us the future. And Dutch Design Week is about the future, because it's our community opening up the doors more than a show of polished products. And there you can get to see the first concept, the first idea, the sketch. And so you get to see things that are finished or you know, for sale maybe in 2 or 3 years, or services that will be up and running in 2 or 3 years, or maybe never. So I really think that we can provide a look into the future, and that's what I wanted to grasp. That's hence the campaign, Now Future. A second thing that I find really important is the balance, the mix, the possibilities to let professional visitors meet with designers. Because in the end, they put a lot of effort and money and time into coming here, 2,000 designers, and I want to make it worth their while. So I make sure that the right kind of visitors meet them, and I organize all sorts of business events for even for business outside of the creative community, maybe especially for them to meet with the creatives, because I really think that's where the future is as well.
Before we talk about the professionalization of an event like this and the encouragement for exhibitors to get in touch with potential buyers and professionals from the industry, let's talk a little bit about the kind of curation approach that you may have had to undertake with your team. So you came up with the title Now Future. How do you select the exhibitors? Do they have to correlate with that idea of looking to the future, or do you find work which chimes with your focus? Or can you just adapt the theme to people who come on board?
Actually, the theme really boiled up from years of experience of what this event, this bottom-up event, is about. So we knew we would, you know, be on target with the theme Now Future. But curation is important, of course. So there's a couple of things to say about that. But if you really want to talk about the mix Now Future and the curation process, we really said it's like I said, it's what's been boiling up for years. You can really look into the future over here. So we knew that was going to work.
What do you mean by that? You can look into the future. You can see products which have then made it to market?
Yes, there are two things. You really look in, did the community open up their doors? We have 80 locations. That's where they work. That's where they live. And you can look inside. So you see their first idea, their first concept, their first sketch and model. And this, like I said before, might hit the market in a couple of years from now on. Where other design weeks often show the finished end products that are on the market now. So that's why you look into the future. But the second one is because of the DNA that's in this region. We are a Philips town with a lot of high tech, with ASML, with a high tech campus, with a technical university. And I honestly believe that the future is about combining the left half and the right half of your brain. Bring in the nerds, bring in the creatives, and them together will bring the solutions for the future. And that's where designers will play an important role. And we have that DNA right here in the heart of our city. That's why I think you can look into the future here.
Eindhoven has an extraordinary legacy of design, obviously a very strong technical base. Do you think Eindhoven has undergone something of an identity change over the time that Philips has staggered its move to the Far East?
Definitely, definitely. 20 years ago, we had about 90,000 people working in the city for Philips. And now it's maybe 7,000 or 8,000. So, and Philips really built this town, so it was in the heart of our town. And that created a rift through our city. It was all open spaces, empty buildings, old buildings. And then we had a government that said, look, we are training the best technicians, we're training the best designers, or educating the best designers in the world, at least that's what we think. Why not give them a place to stay and settle and build a community, a creative community? And now you see that really in the heart of our town, well, you've been walking around, you see that all the buildings are occupied with creatives. And this is kind of, it's an effect that it works like glue, like honey. People, it attracts others, and you know, the community is still growing very, very fast, and it's thriving.
Your background isn't necessarily one of design per se, but it is one which has been involved in innovation and business, for example. You worked at a business school. How do you think your background has helped you sort of take on your role as director for Dutch Design Week?
Well, let me be honest, Alet. I have a small background in design. I once started a design school, but then within half a year, I noticed there was so much more talent around me that I think I made the wise choice to do something else. And I became an organizational psychologist, and I went into organizational change, but always from a bottom-up perspective.
It's a very necessary role then. Capital D, the parent company that organized Dutch Design Week and still does, they were undergoing quite serious financial difficulty until some new funding came in this year. Is the fact they have now found that funding, but the fact that they came from a sort of platform of difficulty, financial difficulty or constraint, a sign that designers and events such as this need to adapt to the reality of the present day, that it is actually very difficult to be a designer or to throw big creative events like this.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. It's we see it in all in cultural aspects as well, that you really need to think about your business model at the same time while not letting it restrain your creative freedom, something like that. And then I see that it's a growing awareness amongst designers as well, that they understand that they need to, find a market for what they do. But they need help, because we train them a lot in creativity, but not so much in business. And that's why we can help as well. And for us as an organization, it's a delicate balance that you need to find. Because yes, I can professionalize the platform, but the problem, the content, the real sizzling, interesting things that we bring are also the uninstitutionalized, new, fresh things boiling up. And if you professionalize and institutionalize too much, you lose that and you lose the bottom underneath your whole week. So it's the dilemma of exploitation and exploration. How do you exploit the platform professionally and make it business savvy and sound, while at the same time preserving the creativity that builds it? We have a facilitating role. We built the stage, but it's the designers that play the music, and it's not us. So in that sense, I think the designers are also relieved that I'm not taking over the show. It's their show. I only want to build a very good stage for them.
There's some parts of this event which are intrinsically Dutch. The Academy has its graduation show. It's not necessarily part of Dutch Design Week. However, there are other parts which are including designers from all over the world. What still remains very much from the Netherlands, from this Dutch Design Week? Is there a Dutch perspective, or is this a platform from Holland which can just communicate Holland's strength in design to the rest of the world?
Well, let me answer your first question first. We were always pretty... We closed the borders and said it has to be Dutch design. And the Design Academy is part of the Dutch Design Week, and it's a Dutch school teaching, the Dutch design legacy, I suppose. I've opened up the borders a bit more, because I think that if we Dutch are good at one thing, it's crossing our borders very early in our life cycle of a company or with our products. And successful Dutch designers are working abroad, because we're such a small country, we have to work abroad. So I think that's really one of our strengths. I found it amazing that at the moment when we really celebrate, Dutch design being an international vision, I think, we're closing up. And that's why I said, let's open the doors a bit more. But it's 80, the Dutch Design Week is 80 locations of our community opening up the doors, so it will always be Dutch. I just want a healthy balance of 70-30 or 80-20. And I think if we're proud about the Dutch design legacy, then we should dare to put it on a pedestal next to what's happening all across the world. And I think we immediately noticed that we could raise the level of curation, we could really attract better talents. And what we see now is a dialogue. What are you doing in Turkey? What are you doing in England? What are you doing in Taipei? And how can this affect? And that's what we Dutch, really should savor, because that's what we are, and that's what we need to celebrate this week.
Director of Dutch Design Week, Martijn Pauwland, speaking to me there. Coming up, after a peek at the 2013 graduation show, I sit down with the new creative director of the Design Academy in Eindhoven, Thomas Wiedershoffen.
You're listening to Section D on Monocle 24, our weekly program on the best in design, architecture, graphics, and fashion. Section D is brought to you by Lexus. Lexus, creating a new chapter in amazing design, technology, and driving.
Welcome back to Section D with me, Aled John. Now, like the overall event itself, Eindhoven's Design Academy has undergone some recent changes at the top. After a period of turmoil, which saw staff leave, return, and then leave again in disagreement with the direction of its courses, A new creative director, Thomas Riedershofen, was installed. His entry to the school's leadership marks the end of a near five-year gap without a creative director at the helm. Riedershofen is well known in the profession for founding Dutch design brand Thonic. And after a stroll around the 2013 graduation show at the Design Academy, one of Dutch Design Week's biggest draws, I met with Thomas to find out what direction he is taking with one of the most prominent Dutch design schools.
Every day we throw away millions of electronic devices because they get old and become worn out. But usually it's only one of the components that causes the problem. The rest of the device works fine but is needlessly thrown away. So this is a new kind of phone. It's made of blocks.
I'm not looking specifically for something different, but as I go along, I keep on changing stuff. So, for instance, what I do see is, if I was just talking about the book we made this year, that's something, a project I could run, because I've been here for 6 months, so on the book I could have an impact. And we have a tradition here to really have glossy photography, almost like a lifestyle magazine, and short text written by text writers. So we really try to get it onto an extremely professional level, this thing. So as we demand of our students to really make something in the end, we also make a book that really shows that something real has been made here. Of course, I said to the designers who worked on it, young designers I know very well, I said, let's keep this tradition to show the projects in a real sense, in a lifestyle sense, good photography and everything. But as you go along, you will see that I think the whole book now is much more intuitive, and it also has a sense of a tactile sense that was not there before. And also we added collages of images around it. So it's also a platform for these young designers to make really a book as an experience, much more than as a catalog. So in that sense, although I'm not trying to change anything, I think I'm changing all the time. And I think that's the only way to do it, to live.
Is that a challenge for you to convey the message that design should translate into something real, perhaps? And it shouldn't just be talked about, but it can be innovation, it can be change, but it has to create something at the end.
I can only say that I like the way you put that. I wish I had your choice of words. It's beautiful. Yeah, so that's what I like. Yeah. No, what I really like is, I think we should keep on focusing with this show now. We're at this show, so this is really on my mind now. We should really keep on focusing on the results. That's what we're good at. That's so special about this school, that we really get to results. But the moment we have them, I want you to think beyond it. I don't start with thinking beyond results, but I think we should make the results and then think beyond it. So in this case, I call the show Self-Unself, because the self from these results, the self, I think, is the source. All these projects are self-initiated. So the students come up with their own themes, with their own talents, and that's what is the start of the project. Then we get them to come to real results, and now I'm asking actually the audience, get into interaction with these designers to find out the source, but also look at what they are aiming at. Because a lot of the things have really big issues. Although they are small projects, they have big issues. And some of them want to change the industry, or change economics, or change the environment. And all this, I think, is the beyond the result. In a sense, I call that the unself. I call it the unself more because I see that people are collaborating and that they are altruistic also, that they want to save the world. That is the main reason why I call it unself. But also, I call it unself because you transcend the self.
So if, for instance, your phone is getting a little slow, you can just upgrade the block that affects the speed. Or if something breaks, you can easily replace it with a new one.
Did you come up with the name Self-Unself after having viewed a large proportion of the work? Or was it a question of you offering some kind of curatorial direction to the students?
I don't think it's my role to give a theme to students. I think the students should find their own theme and that I can maybe shed some light on it. It was words because I saw this unselfish attitude of this generation. And I wanted to stress that we have individual-oriented education, so that we need the self. But I also see in this generation that they are not losing their self in these bigger groups that they want to work together with in and the collaborations. So it was something I saw walking through the graduation, which was in June. And then I was able to make also an exhibition about the theme. So that's really curated, and there I really talk or research the theme. And I did that in a museum here in town, in the Van Abbe Museum. And that's not graduation stuff. It's three graduates, but the rest is known and less known designers who I think, by showing them, I think I researched that theme.
That collaboration is a big draw for some of the crowds that you see in Eindhoven today. Obviously, it is Dutch Design Week as well. Do you see the Academy, the Design Academy, as being a particular draw for crowds for the Dutch Design Week?
We are an incredible draw because we get 20,000 people visiting this show, and they're paying visitors. Yeah, I'm still wondering how we ever did this, but we do it, and we offer enough, I think, for people to come back. I'm trying to. But also, we're not only a draw in the whole thing, but also a lot of students stay in the region. So you have a lot of small studios. For instance, you have Section C, where a lot of students and old students or alumni are working together in little workshops. So in that sense, I think the Academy has a big influence on the whole Dutch Design Week, because a lot of the stuff that you see is also by alumni who stayed on and see now Eindhoven as a place to work.
That's an interesting idea, that collaboration is a theme that I've seen quite a lot in the design exhibitions. Perhaps risky for students when they graduate to want to collaborate instantly, rather than set themselves up as the sole designer, hog the spotlight kind of thing.
Yeah, for me it's only natural because I did exactly the same. I started with my wife. We have a collaboration and we work under a firm name, Tonic. So we never say who did what. We've been doing this for 20 years. So for me it's a very natural attitude. And I think, if you're strong and if you know what you can, then you should be open to collaborations, and then the project can only grow. So that's actually what I really want to teach here. Is that the people should have an open mind to themes, to the world, and to collaborations.
Just finally then, Thomas, what lies ahead for you and the Academy in the next year or so? What would you like to focus on beyond this year's graduation? You have a new tranche of students, you have more challenges ahead.
First, I want to get a grip on what it means to exhibit, because it's such a part of the curriculum. I see this show as part of the curriculum. It's not a saying goodbye to the student. So I'm researching what exhibiting means and how that works. And in that sense, I'm opening up now collaborations with, for instance, a Van Abbe Museum, because that's a stage. I'm moving into a cultural area, but I also want to move in a more technical area, because I think 15 years ago or something, we said goodbye to computers in this academy, and we made workplaces as the core element. And I think it's very good that we did. It makes that... That the students are already working with their hands and making stuff. And I think that's very good in the curriculum. It's very, very important, and it makes us also special. But on the other hand, new technology is also something that we have a lot of in Eindhoven. I think maybe for that reason only already that I think we should incorporate it a bit more. Eindhoven is one of the technical highlights of the world. And we have a very strong industry. Very strong TU, the Technical University. So, I think this year I will focus on exhibiting and culture, and next year I want to expand in that direction. But opening up doors and windows is something I want to do. So now I go in that direction, and the next one will be in a more technical sense, I think.
Electrical signals are transferred through the pins, and two small screws lock everything in.
Thomas Wiedershoffen, Creative Director at Eindhoven Design Academy there. One of the most talked about exhibitions at Eindhoven this year was the show of Dutch company Flisco. Its printed textiles are certainly nothing new, quite the opposite in fact. The manufacturers and design house has been selling its distinctive patterns for more than 100 years, mainly to West Africa. In what is a somewhat counterintuitive turn of globalisation, the Dutch firm now wants to open its colourful products to new markets in the West. Monocle's David Pleasant went down to the Flisco show to talk textiles.
From tapping into new global markets to showing a local expertise and know-how, design companies have been under a lot of pressure to deliver their product to a world stage. Textile manufacturers and design house Flisco, which this year are being represented at Dutch Design Week, have been exporting brand Holland for more than a century and a half. Although, to look at the company's products, very few would guess that they are all made just a few kilometres up the road from Eindhoven, in the quiet Dutch town of Helmond. Bold, brazen prints, layers of colour, patterns and drawings, objects, cars, animals, coins, banknotes, or buildings. The printed materials that Vlisco produces are exactly what you might associate with the colours and fashions of West Africa. However, it was Vlisco, after seeking inspiration from the patterns and prints of the then Dutch colony of Indonesia, that adapted styles and techniques to the African market. Long a global brand, Vlisco is riding high on a trend for African prints in the West. But colonial connections and an early global network mean that this Dutch company has always been ahead of the trends.
I'm Roger Gerards. I'm the creative director of the brand Vlisco. And at the moment we are on an exhibition we made especially for the Dutch Design Week in Eindhoven. We exist already for 167 years and it started that the family Ventinger van Vlissingen, that's why we called Vlisco, bought a cotton printer and started to make batik for the Indonesian market. We copied the batik technique for the Indonesian market. Very shortly, we stopped at a certain moment around 1900 making these textiles for Indonesian for several reasons. And after that, slowly, more and more, our product also was sold to West Africa. The image then, in the beginning of the last century, looked quite Indonesian. And the more we became popular in West Africa, the more we got a relationship with the consumer and the environment and the culture. And our image, our design image, the DNA, really changed because of that relationship. So nowadays, we sell 30 million yards of textiles to West Central Africa with a very specific design DNA. It's a lot about drawing, a lot about colors, a lot about storytelling. And I think everybody knows our product, but doesn't know it's a Vlisco product.
So as you mentioned, your product has become a huge success, an iconic product in yes. West Africa. And that's probably a story that's not known to us in the West, perhaps to a lot of Dutch people, but to a lot of people in the West isn't so known. And now we're seeing that coming back to us here, that story. Is that very much what you're trying to do with this exhibition, kind of bring that colonial and then African story back?
What I try is to tell the untold story of Vlisco to the world. That's not an African story, but it's a Vlisco story, because it is literally designed in Holland. We have a design department of 50 designers and an own factory still making it in Holland, because a lot of textile industry is gone. So it's a Vlisco story, but there's a lot of African content to it. Well, almost only African content to it. And that makes it so strange. I always say we are very busy for 400 million people, but not living in Holland. And that's, or even Europe. It's not really true, but you understand that there's a strange kind of distance in that.
Roger takes me round the large exhibition, which occupies the entire floor of a former Philips workshop. As you might expect, colours and textured printing dominate. Familiar African designs are seen in a whole new light.
Well, what I did is I chose an old design, which we engraved again for the exhibition, and it's a drawing of a factory. By that I want to express that we have a factory, so that it helps our own product I can communicate with. And I show here that we still print the wax on white cotton, and we print it on both sides. So this sticky, shimmery glue you see, that's the wax. And everything which is white, which is the factory drawing, will be blue because we dip the whole bunch in a bath of indigo, which takes 2 hours. And there you see the result in which what was white becomes blue. And then the drawing is attached to the cotton.
You've mentioned in the dialogue that we had this morning that you don't like to say that you're designing for the African woman, for instance. You've said that before. That's not what you're trying to do, is it?
Of course, they are our key consumer, but we design from the brand DNA. And it has been made African by our consumers, but I look more to the origin of the brand and to what it has done in the last years. I define what it is, and from that we design further. So the designers get a lot of freedom also on their ideas, and because of the technique and the colors we have, which are very specific, well, even world unique, that we make our own colors as well, that it always becomes this Africanity in it, because we know it as African, but in officially, it's just Dutch design. That's why we're here.
A Dutch company with iconic, ostensibly African designs. A local global success story, but a complex story to pitch to the consumer. So what next for the Vlisco story? And how will it expand beyond its core West African market? I spoke to one man who should know. Vlisco's CEO, Hans Ouwendek.
we decided to change our strategy. Not only focusing on the very special process of making up these products and printing these products. If you compare it to a normal design business, it takes 2 hours from start to finish. For us, if you go to our production process, it 22 different treatments, it takes 2.5 weeks. So we decided to change it, not only looking at the unique process of the and the brand, but also focusing more on the marketing, on exploring the brand on a wider area than just Africa.
And so you're bringing it back from Africa. Do you see that that's as a kind of process? Are you trying to kind of expand beyond that market? Yeah. And that comes at a time when African styles, trends are very fashionable. How do you see, kind of looking forward in a few years' time, how do you see that process of selling your name?
Well, I think there are two elements in that. Today we are more than 90% of our business is in Africa. And I think it will also be in the next few years. We have a huge expansion possibility in Africa. We're going to do that. But beside that, we're getting more and more requests of consumers, of customers who would like to do something with Vlisco on a more wider basis than just Africa. And that's what we are also open for now. We would like to work together with other specialists, co-ops and partnerships to ultimately look at this brand. And that will not be in the next 3 years, but it will be ultimately, it has the potential to become a global brand.
Downstairs, I meet Anna Kevesseling, who came all the way from Amsterdam to see the Vlisco show.
I bought a chair in the sale 2 years ago from the Morosco. That's a firm, I think Italian, in the design shop in Amsterdam where I live. And the chair was, the price was going down, and I bought it. And it was totally covered with Vlisco textile. Fantastic. It's in our bedroom. I love it deeply.
Were you impressed with the exhibition? Did you enjoy it?
Impressed is a big word because I have two critical eyes. I enjoy it, yeah. And I miss a little shop there. I told to the director there. That's so stupid.
Not enough retail opportunities. That's not a complaint that exhibition curators often receive. But the enthusiasm and excitement around Vlisco's Eindhoven show is tangible. And despite the boldness and vigour of its prints, that have in Africa been famous for decades, the company feels like a well-kept Dutch secret, keeping its head down and delivering a high-quality product to a market it knows and respects. From Holland to Indonesia, to West Africa and back to Holland, Vlisco now looks to build on its success and export to what are for the company emerging markets, such as Europe and North America.
Reveal your unseen side with our new collection, now available at Vlisco.com.
David Pleasant reporting there. Coming up, David meets some of Eindhoven Academy's recent graduates with their latest table, home and living wear included. But first, it wouldn't be right to cover such an event, based as it is in Eindhoven, without doffing our cap to the legacy of its technological past. Philips grew from a father-son company to the global tech powerhouse familiar to anyone with a TV, radio, shaver, and dealings in the healthcare industry. With the success of its original creation, the incandescent lamp in 1891, Philips transformed Eindhoven forever, at one point employing over 90,000 workers across its factories and research departments. But with the potential for Western companies to manufacture its products in the Far East, the world changed, and the heart of this southern Dutch city skipped a beat. The identity change from factory to knowledge town forms much of my discussion with our next guest, Rogier van der Heide, Chief Design Officer for Philips Lighting. He tells me how Philips, despite a rather muted presence at Dutch Design Week, is very much involved in the design community across the Netherlands.
Over 120 years of innovation shows Philips's commitment to improving people's lives. Everything started with light.
The lighting industry is in transformation. It is making this shift from lamps and bulbs and, let's say, analog lighting to digital lighting. We've heard a lot about it now. And Philips is the largest company in lighting, so we are supposed to lead that transformation. So for a designer, that should be a very exciting time to be part of that change and to drive it with products that really tap into the sort of unknown qualities of light or the undiscovered qualities of light that now have become more accessible and more feasible with LED.
Let's talk about some of the Philips products that are featuring at Dutch Design Week. You have some collaborations here. Can you tell me a little bit about what work Philips is doing with the designers and what one can go and see should they care to?
Okay, well, here at the Design Week, I think very interesting is our collaboration with Pauline van Dongen. She is a fashion designer and she focuses on technology in fashion. She integrates technology with garments and not just stitching buttons to control your iPod on a sleeve of a jacket, but she does really integrated stuff. For example, she is developing garments that include illumination, but this illumination, you don't look into it. It shines onto the fabric and then reflects, so it becomes incredibly sophisticated and gentle. And I think it takes a fashion designer to explore that. So that makes Philips in the collaboration really an enabler, because the fashion designer has a dream. And our technologies in the field of integration of fabrics and light make that dream become real. So we do, I think, very exciting things with the same technology, but we use it mostly in medical applications. For example, we produced a blanket, and this blanket gives a very special light that helps small babies to activate their metabolism. Maybe you know that some babies, they turn yellow right after the birth, and then they need light therapy. So you can put them under a big lampshade with bright white light. But it's very uncomfortable and it's very unpleasant and it's not really convenient for the nurse. And the mom and dad have to leave the baby in the hospital. But we put that same light in a blanket and you can wrap a fluffy plush blanket around the baby and the baby gets light therapy. And I think that's so sweet, you know, and so much in the heart of what we want to be as Philips. We want to be a people's company. We want to do healthcare. We want to make simple solutions that enrich your life. Or that sounds like marketing babble, but it is for real. So when we could team up with Pauline van Dongen, the fashion designer, I thought it's great because this same technology that cures the baby now finds its way into fashion.
75 verkondigden de ramen van het hoofdkantoor van Philips. Fabrieken en kantoren stroomden leeg en massa's feestvierders vulden Eindhoven straten en vormden optochten met portretten van Dr. Anton Philips en de huidige president-directeur Frits Philips.
Eindhoven is the home of Philips, and Philips is omnipresent in certain ways, but it's quite a restrained presence here, considering it the legacy of the company in the town. Could you perhaps paint a picture for us of how important Philips is, or was, for Eindhoven, and where the company is now, concerning its design presence in contemporary Dutch design?
Myself, I am on the Philips leadership. We still feel very fond of Eindhoven, and even though, yes, it is our home, but Shanghai has become our second home, you know. China is our home country. Not only for manufacturing, certainly not. We have, I believe, 1,500 scientists and researchers and designers working in Shanghai on our campus there. It's a huge market for us, obviously. But if I go back to Eindhoven, this was once the place where all our factories were and, you know, where the big inventions were done. There was a world-class laboratory. But some of that is still here. And although manufacturing doesn't really take place here, a few exceptions, but almost not, this is still a place where we invest big time in research. You know, we want this to be our number one research center in the world. And we attract that way scientists of the very top level. We collaborate with the technical university. We have opened up the campus for all kinds of other companies, from startups to really established high-tech companies, chemical, whatever. They have their labs, their research. It's a community, and Eindhoven, I think they have played a very smart game. They say, well, look, Holland is a small country. We have the airport, which provides about 100,000 jobs near Amsterdam. Then we have Rotterdam, the port. Rotterdam calls themselves the main port, right? There is the airport, the main port. And then Eindhoven said, well, we are the brain port. So brain port became not just a buzzword, but a concept that we really all have in our minds and understand and that we kind of try to live up to. And Brainport is Eindhoven as a city where knowledge is created and commercialized and shared and cultivated. And the university is a big player in there. The Design Academy is a big player in there. The city, because they foster all of that. And Philips as one of the main drivers and still having thousands of people employed in Eindhoven, but now not anymore in factories, but really in, you know, strategy. Research, design. Our biggest design studio is here.
With the move of much of the resource team in Philips to the Far East, has
Einhorn had to then go and undergo a kind of identity change to an extent.
I think you're right, and they've done so well. I mean, it is a really impressive case study, I think. I mean, there is Strijp, and you were just there. Strijp is a factory complex. It's not the biggest factory complex you've ever seen, but it is sizable, you know. It's a lot of historic buildings. They were all empty. And look what is happening there now. I mean, I don't mean the Dutch Design Week. I mean, all year round, people are living there, people are working there, people have their play there, you know, their leisure. There's innovation companies, design studios. It's a very, very lively environment. It's well connected to the city centers. It's actually just a brief walk, but there's a fast shuttle. It's all very thoughtful and it works. If Eindhoven would not have done that and instead just feel, you know, self-pity when Philip decided to go, I don't think it would have been much good, you know. And now it is a place where people enjoy living and where you can go really for the best education in design and technology. So I'm really impressed. And I think indeed, as you say, the city did reinvent itself, you know. It has a different identity now. It was a factory town. It's a knowledge city now. I think in 2012 or 11, it was voted the smartest region in the world or something like that. It topped Silicon Valley, you know. That's quite impressive. And I think the city should be proud of that, you know.
This is an exciting time for you. I can see you're animated by it. Could you describe some of the most exciting developments in the sphere of LEDs or what we can expect from the next year or so?
Most exciting is that these tiny little light sources give us new ways to integrate light in our life. We're not anymore restricted to a sizable bulb. We're not anymore restricted to access. We don't need to access the light source to replace it, because LED has a very, very long lifetime. It will actually survive me, you know. If I now install an LED, it will still be on when I die. More concretely, what is the most exciting? That I can now make a building material that glows. A wall panel can be luminous. A ceiling tile can be luminous. A curvy shape can be luminous. A plinth or anything, we make it luminous. So a material specification for an interior says, this is a floor and it is wood and this is the texture and this is the dimension and this is the color. And I believe that soon a parameter everywhere present on these material specifications will be luminosity. We will define color, dimension, strength, and brightness.
Rogier van der Heide, Chief Design Officer of Philips Lighting, talking to me there. Coming up, David Pleasant explores the wares of Eindhoven Academy's recent graduates.
You're listening to Section D on Monocle 24, our weekly program on the best in design, architecture, graphics, and fashion. Section D is brought to you by Lexus. Lexus, creating a new chapter in amazing design, technology, and driving.
Welcome back to Section D. As Dutch Design Week takes over this generally quiet southern Dutch city, various hubs emerge as key points on the design itinerary. One such place has to be Eat Drink Design, which occupies the fascinating Kazerne complex of buildings. Here, young, mainly Eindhoven-trained designers show off the best of their wares, with the loose theme of eating and drinking in mind. In the rough-and-ready, minimally converted rooms of this 18th-century structure, David met Anneman Geerts and some of the many excited young designers.
The concept is simple. Why not enjoy design in situ, instead of the familiar trail through endless halls filled with design pieces that, no matter the pitch or the USP, all end up looking the same? On a street corner in the centre of Eindhoven lies the Kazerne, a deceptively large group of coach houses, warehouse spaces, and a former inn that date back more than 200 years. Once inside, visitors can enjoy top cuisine at around €35 a head, all served and enjoyed on design items, curated and displayed as part of Dutch Design Week. To tell me more about this ambitious project, I met the lady in charge.
Welcome at eDrink Design at Kazerne. My name is Annemoon Geerts. I'm the initiator, founder, art director. eDrink Design is a pop-up restaurant, or was a pop-up restaurant, with an exhibition. And the idea is that when you are a longer time within the exhibition, you are enjoying it in a different way. The experience is totally different when you are enjoying your meal and your a glass of wine instead of just walking around.
This year, the space has been much expanded. Previously, the show was very much centered on this eating area that we are at now. Now there are various other rooms. Has that just been out of demand? Has there been so many people, so many designers to include? Is it a sign of just how booming the design scene is in this regard?
Yeah, you could say that it's quite booming, but it's also, I strongly believe in creative industries, and we need a platform to show their power. And not only to show it, but to let other people, designers, get in touch with the creatives. We need a meeting place, we need a place to show them off. And that's why we started this, and that's also why it's expanding. Because it's not only, in the future it will be not only eating, but it will also be sleeping and partying within the exhibition. The Kazerne will be a platform for the creative industries. It will be 2,500 square meters of exhibition space, and in the space there will be 2 restaurants, 7 guest houses, so little hotel rooms, and 3 boardrooms to party, to mourn, but always within the exhibition. The idea is that the restaurants and the hotel rooms, the profit of that will go into the program we make. So with the profit of the restaurants, the hotel rooms, the boardrooms, we can make new exhibitions, we can finance the social design lab, and we can finance the meetings, because that's one of our main goals, to let creatives meet their assigners. They actually get new assignments instead of just showing off nice things and don't have any money to eat.
Enough talk. Let's meet some of the designers who are standing at the ready by their pieces, all set out in suitably conceptual arrangements around the Kazerne.
My name is Hannah Maring, and I just recently graduated from the Design Academy, and I'm very lucky to also be able to show my stuff here.
And your stuff is, it's not a very nice way of describing it, because it's wonderful ceramic pieces on a very long table. I don't know how many meters that is, but it's a wonderfully long dining table filled with all sorts of different bowls. Tell us a bit about these products.
So I used the terracotta pouring clay to make all of the different containers. And then they're being reduction fired in the kiln, which is an old technique. I started in the first place really investigating this black color. When I came across these roof tiles for the first time, I was really amazed by how you feel that the color comes from inside the object and is not a layer put on top. And I think that, you know, people feel that it has a different touch. I've been thinking a lot about the context also of black, of the color black, of course. And that's why I'm very happy also with this setting now, because the black in the black context gives something completely different than on a white table, of course.
My name is Robert Anderson, and I'm with Boo, a young Dutch company based in lighting. And we're standing next to the surface tension lamp, and that is a lamp that creates its own lampshade by blowing a large soap bubble around an LED lamp. And during the life of the lamp, which is about 50,000 hours, it will create millions and millions of different lampshades. So you have a really unique piece here.
So you envisage that people would have this in their living room as a kind of centerpiece, a talking point?
It could be used for that, but this lamp is actually part of our Boo Lab section, where we give the designers that we create mass-produced projects much more freedom to do something really completely off the scale, crazy. And yeah, they drew this on paper, and we worked with an engineer for a year to really make it work in real life, because it's a really technical piece.
Yeah, so just kind of to describe in a little bit of detail for the listener, the bubble, the kind of soap bubble is literally kind of coming out of the light, the lamp fixture. So clearly the first question is, you know, water and electricity are things that don't normally mix. So was that one of the main challenges?
Absolutely. Front is really a design group that really works on a magical level sometimes. They want to create things that really can't exist. And this is really was their initial idea, to create something using water, soap, electricity, like the LED lights completely encased in soap. And there's a whole mechanical process going inside. And this was a huge challenge for us to make it work reliably.
Lamps that blow bubbles. Glassware that gradually turns cloudy. Metamorphosis seems to define much in the eclectic selection of objects at the Kaserne for the Eat Drink Design exhibition. The historic surroundings that host the show and its restaurant will soon be a permanent event space and a place to stay, with several bedrooms to be designed. This change in motion can be seen to define Eindhoven too. The industry and electricity that made the city famous, fueling an ever-evolving hunger for beauty and ingenuity. For Monocle, in Eindhoven, I'm David Pleasant.
And I'm afraid that's all we've got time for in this week's Dutch Design Special of Section D. Next week we'll be back with more coverage from the event, with a tour of exhibitions taking place in the iconic former Philips factory, the Klokkerboel, meet a former Philips designer turned baker, and hear from the activist winner of this year's Mini Dutch Design Award for a Young Designer. Today's show was edited by the wonderful Holly Fisher. You can contact me, the producer, alid@awj@monocle.com, if you have any queries about the show, or indeed if you're a designer who could catch our eye. I'm Alid John, and before we go, a song to play us out. I'm going to resist the urge to play you a song from the Dutch musical canon and go with something of a favourite of mine. This is David Bowie with Fashion. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.